Radhika Jones, editor-in-chief of Vanity Fair. If you enjoy binge-watching the best TV shows and love hearing from the actors and showrunners who make them happen, then subscribe to Vanity Fair. Our Hollywood reporters take you behind the scenes of the year's most anticipated projects, the industry's biggest moves, and the hardest-fought awards races. From The Crown to The Real Housewives, we've got the inside scoop. As a special thank you to our still-watching audience, we're offering 15% off a yearly digital subscription to Vanity Fair. Visit vanityfair.com today and use promo code POD15. That's vanityfair.com, promo code POD15 for 15% off a yearly digital subscription to everything you want.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Ladies, your table is ready.
They say some things never change, but the truth is, life is full of surprises. And as your story unfolds, the city reinvents itself. And just like that, a new chapter begins.
Hello and welcome to Still Watching. This is the podcast from Vanity Fair, where usually we are discussing a single episode of a TV series at a time. This time we are doing a very special one-off episode on And Just Like That, aka the new Sex and the City. We are going to discuss the first four episodes of And Just Like That, because that is what has aired as you listen to this, and that's what's been provided for people to see in advance. And to join me, I'm Katie Rich. I should have introduced myself. And I'm joined by Hillary Busis.
Hello.
And Julie Miller.
Hello, hello. Hillary, that was such like a sexy hello. Such an introduction. Ooh. Very Sex and the City appropriate.
I mean, I could just do this entire thing as Samantha.
If that would help.
Would that be fun for everyone? Oh, honey.
I want you to have as many puns as possible to us, because they're seriously lacking on the new Sex and the City.
Yeah, well, at least we are three white women discussing.
It's true. It's the only legally required to discuss the show, I think. So we want to talk about the first four episodes. We'll get into detail on what's on the show. But I think we have to start with the news about the show that's been dominating in the last week since it's premiered. And we're recording this a week early, so as you listen to this, it's very possible that this story will have developed, so we'll catch up as best we can. But Julie, you have been doing most of the writing for us about the allegations against Chris Noth that are really disturbing and serious. Can you just catch us up on where things stand as we record this?
Right. Well, even before the allegations, it was a wild week for Chris Noth's related character, because spoiler alert, if you haven't seen that first episode, but his character dies in a Peloton-related death. There was this whole scramble because Peloton stock plummeted 11% the day after the series premiered. Peloton scrambled over the weekend. They pulled off this commercial, kind of reincarnating Big with his favorites, Peloton instructor. The commercial went viral. This was Sunday night.
And Ryan Reynolds was responsible for it, which is a weird footnote that I feel like doesn't have to be included.
Right. He has a production company. He was there. Somehow he manifested this whole thing, and he provides the voiceover. Anyway, cut to Thursday. There's terrible allegations surface in The Hollywood Reporter from Kim Masters, in which two women who do not know each other, came to The Hollywood Reporter, in the fall after HBO Max announced that they were going to reboot the series. And they said that they had these memories of alleged assaults that took place in 2004 and 2015 that were triggered by this promotion. One woman claims that she was assaulted by Noth after meeting him at some sort of Los Angeles agency. She claims that she was working an entry-level job. She was 22 at the time. This was 2004. He got her number, started calling her, invited her over to a building where he had an apartment, assaulted her there. She claims that she went to Cedar-Sinai after, had to get treatment from the UCLA Rape Treatment Center, which confirmed it did treat her, but did not give any specifics of the situation. The other woman met Noth in New York City. This is this woman who uses the pseudonym Lily was 25 at the time. And she claims that she was a Sex and the City mega fan. So when she met Chris Noth, she was just flattered, and he invited her to Il Cantarini.
It's Il Cantanori. I'm very sorry that I know this. I'm very sorry that I know this with such absolute clarity.
This is why you're here, Hillary. It's okay.
Right. So she claims that he invited her over for dinner. She was all excited because the restaurant served a plot line in Sex and the City. She gets there. The restaurant's closed. They have wine. Noth invites her back to his apartment around the corner, and then she claims he assaulted her there. Anyway, so these allegations come out on Thursday. In the hours afterwards, Peloton pulls this ad that they had put together in 48 hours from all of its social media accounts. HBO has not responded to any of, you know, questions for comments. And today, these allegations just seem to be gathering momentum on Twitter, at least. But, you know, we'll see how this lands in the HBO Max universe, and if any of the cast members, who I imagine are doing a ton of press right now, will have to respond to these allegations.
Yeah, that was an incredibly
sorry. That was very exhaustive.
No, but it's, I mean, wild ride is really the way to describe it, because the Peloton thing was like funny and silly, and then Ryan Reynolds was involved, and then it just took this turn to really terrible and serious. And it doesn't really have anything to do with the show, but it does. And he's not going to be on the future episodes of the show, which I think is a really big break for the series itself. But Hillary, how do you feel like it's overshadowing this kind of long awaited return of Sex and the City?
I mean, yeah, it certainly is, especially because, you know, not to conflate a person with the character that they play on TV, but the version of John James Preston, who is on the show now, has been like really kind of sanitized in a way that he wasn't on the original show. Like Mr. Big in the original Sex and the City was always very like remote and a terrible boyfriend, and he was always, you know, failing Carrie. And they I don't know if it's just the passage of time or a more conscious reevaluating of the character, but, you know, everybody is kind of treating him on the show as though he was this like saintly perfect husband. And so having the dissonance between this more recent version of the character and these actual allegations against the actor who played him is, I mean, that's certainly something that it seems like the show didn't anticipate it. I guess it's good for them that he's not on it anymore, since, you know, they won't have to face questions about his continued involvement. But it definitely casts a pall over the project, considering the way that the characters are remembering him, if that makes any sense.
So you're Susan Sharon at the funeral saying, does anyone else remember what an asshole he was to her?
I mean, basically, yeah, it is kind of insane. Even when Natasha shows up in episode 3 and, you know, Carrie is forced to kind of reconcile her past behavior with her present, like, it does seem like the show doesn't totally remember how messy and like complicated it used to be. But that's very separate from the very real issue of an actual person having allegedly, you know, assaulted actual women. I should, you know, make that clear.
Yeah, but it does. I think it does speak to the glossiness of the new one, which I think falls for me between the movies and the show. Like the movies especially seem to just be the like all fabulous clothes, no real drama version of Sex and the City. And this one seems a little bit more closer to the ground, but it's not as real as it felt, which is a weird thing to say about Sex and the City, but I think for those of us who watched it in its very early days, it really did feel that way.
Right. I don't know if you guys experienced the same thing, but in that first episode, when Carrie comes back and they're having this conversation about the salmon and they're just like drinking wine, I had this moment where I was like, is everybody watching the same show I am? It just seems so divorced from the reality of you know, the series before that, which I guess
I feel like what's weird about And Just Like That is that it's it's kind of artificial in a different way than Sex and the City was, because Sex and the City, the original, is so heightened, so quippy, like the clothes are insane, the situations are, you know, very heightened, like nothing that happened on that show was real, none of these women are actual recognizable people. But I feel, again, just like that, kind of conversely, I guess, to what we're saying, is trying to make them real and trying to make them kind of reconcile with reality in a way that isn't totally comfortable for them or for the show.
Interesting.
Like, I think if the movies went too far in the direction of, like, we're just going to have fashion and shoes and, like, puns, then this is maybe trying to correct for that, but it's still an overcorrection.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, I think you see it really obviously in this fourth episode where you've got Charlotte trying to invite black friends to a dinner party and worrying about them being only the only black people. And earlier in the season, you kind of have Miranda like really struggling her way through this class. I mean, I think the really conscious effort to have people of color on the show at all is kind of, I mean, they had to. They couldn't have had this show be as white as it was in the original incarnation. And I've really kind of come around on some elements of it. Like, I think, like, Charlotte and Harry as the only white people at this dinner party is funny. Like, there are a lot of, like, good moments in that. But it can feel really awkward because there's still a bunch of white people, like, kind of trying to catch up with the moment. Like, where are you guys landing on that specific attempt to update the show?
I appreciated that they kind of leaned into that blind spot with these scenes around the dinner party and kind of incorporating that as the storyline because the show had been so white.
I mean, Charlotte even says, I wrote this quote down, it is unacceptable that we don't have a more diverse friendship circle, which, like, really, like, that's a ridiculous thing to say. It does feel like something that Charlotte would say, and it does feel like,
oh yeah,
it's a commentary on the show, but it does make sense also within the show's universe that she would be like having this panic.
Yeah,
very much.
And it makes sense for Miranda too. Like, I think in that first episode, like, her like extremely cringeworthy like moment in the classroom felt pretty terrible to me, but I do think her as a woman who went to the Women's March and is like trying to catch up on intersectional feminism and struggling at it, like, that does make sense as a character beat, even if it's not been presented in the most elegant way.
It does. But yeah, I think that Charlotte making friends with like a high powered like black woman who is really just like in the same socioeconomic like circles as her makes a ton of sense. I think that Che Diaz, Sarah Ramirez's character, is really interesting, especially seeing how they're going to interact with Miranda. I think that the Miranda storyline with her professor is the one that's like not sitting well with me, especially like that when they have that conversation at lunch or at dinner about like parenting and trying to have it all. It's like, I don't buy that this woman would want to spend any time with Miranda outside of the classroom, given the way that Miranda has acted every time they've interacted.
Yeah. And that character played by Karen Pittman still feels like a sounding board for Miranda more than a person, which I think is true of basically all of the new characters of color, except for maybe Che Diaz. Like, I think they are more of a person. And like, I think we're obviously heading up to Miranda like having a crush on Che, whether or not that actually is a relationship. So I'm intrigued to see where that goes. And the rest of them, I'm like, all right, guys, catch up. Like, these have to be people, not just like window dressing. Yeah.
Although, I guess the show's credit, they're trying a little bit with Naya's the only one I think that we've seen like at home away from any of the other characters. Right. Like, we haven't seen what I'm forgetting what Charlotte's friend's name is.
Lisa
Todd Wexley. Yes. How could I forget?
That's an incredible name, though. That's a perfect Sex and the City name.
That's a really good Sex and the City name. But yeah, we haven't like gone home with her. We don't know what her relationship is like. We don't know like anything about her besides her interactions with Charlotte. And like, we have seen Naya speak to her husband on the phone once. Which is,
I think you see them like having coffee in the morning too, as like part of a montage. But yeah, it's not much. I do think that just to talk about Lisa Todd Wexley for a second. So that's Nicole Ari Parker, and then her husband's played by Chris Jackson, aka George Washington from Hamilton. And the two of them just really fit into this world. I really like them as like Sex and the City side characters. So I hope we get to see more of them because they are well set within the Manhattan of the show, I think.
Right.
Yes, and Seema, who we meet in episode 4, I think also seems like more of a person.
The real estate agent, right?
Yeah. So she's going to be Carrie's friend. And she seems like she's sort of a Samantha type.
Right, exactly. I know. Mm-hmm. I'm excited to hear more about her dating app storyline. because she seems the entry point to me about, you know, Michael Patrick King has teased that one of the reasons they needed to kill Big off was because they wanted to see Carrie explore these storylines that she couldn't otherwise, including Carrie getting into dating apps. So it seems to me that Seema is going to be the whole dating app liaison who introduces Carrie to that world, if my guesses are accurate.
I'm Alex Schwartz.
I'm Nomi Fry.
I'm Vincent Cunningham, and this is Critics at Large, a New Yorker podcast for the culturally curious.
Each week, we're going to talk about a big idea that's showing up across the cultural landscape, and we'll trace it through all the mediums we love. Books, movies, television, music, art.
And I always want to talk about celebrity gossip, too.
Of course.
What are you guys excited to cover in the next few months?
There's a new translation of the Iliad that's coming out, Emily Wilson. Oh. Really excited to see whether I can read the Iliad again, whether I'm that literate. I mean, the jury is out.
I can't wait to hear Adam Driver go again in an Italian accent in Michael Mann's Ferrari.
He can't stop.
I mean, and bless him. I can't wait.
Molto bene.
Molto bene.
We hope you'll join us for new episodes each Thursday. Follow Critics at Large today, wherever you get podcasts.
You really don't want to miss this.
Don't.
Don't miss this.
Don't miss it.
See you soon.
I do think killing Big was the right thing to do. Aside from all of this outside of the show drama we've been witnessing, like, I think that makes for a more interesting story. And I think the show never really knew what to do with Carrie as a happily married person. Like, that's not
right.
A version of a story that feels comfortable for this character that we know.
Yeah, it always felt, I mean, it always kind of, the whole storyline of the second movie is like, maybe I shouldn't be with him. Am I bored? The whole storyline of the first movie, obviously, is that he still can't commit to her. And she still, throughout all of this, like, keeps her old apartment. Like, it does kind of seem like the show always wanted to have her have, like, one foot out of the relationship and just, yeah. But I will say the way that they killed him is still ridiculous.
I know. What would have been a better take on that?
If she called 911, I don't know.
If it hadn't been, like, a montage with Lily playing the piano.
Right, I know. It was a whole Godfather-esque scene, the cuts between that classical music and then the... But Michael Patrick King said that he actually raised the subject of potentially killing Big off to Chris Noth before. He didn't say around what time, but it very much seems like he was trying to make up for that, for marrying her off and having her as comfortable as she was. It does seem, and I don't want to be glib about this at all, but the show has, you know, said so much during the promotion of it that they are going to be leaning into these real issues like the pandemic and with Miranda's drinking and that's how she's coping, all these very real life issues that we would get to see the characters grapple with. And if we were seeing the version of Big that we saw in seasons one or two, I feel like a very plausible storyline could be that Big was, like, outed as some Me Too. Me Too. He could have had a Me Too moment. So this
honestly, I kind of thought that that's why they bothered introducing his secretary, that, like, she must have I thought maybe she would have a skeleton or something in the closet, but she covered something up. But I guess that maybe would be too dark.
Too dark.
Even for a darker even for a darker sequel to Sex and the City.
Right.
Yeah.
They are just very much doing a neat job of kind of, like, returning Carrie to square one in terms of, like, selling off this apartment, getting her back there. They're doing a pretty, pretty efficient job of that.
All of her old clothes still hanging in that closet.
Right.
She just kept the apartment as a satellite closet. You know, who hasn't?
It's like a museum to her younger self. It's crazy.
I mean, if you walked into that apartment, I would, like, flip my lid if they, like, recreated that apartment as some kind of pop-up thing. I would be there in a heartbeat. I like getting her in the third episode where she's snooping around in his stuff and meeting up with Natasha. I feel like that's a really good place for that character to be. Like, paranoid Carrie is always kind of fun. And then the scene with Natasha, I thought, worked really well. Like, I did not expect to be so happy to see Natasha return. And the way they just got into, you know, bygones being bygones, I liked that move for them.
Well, it's weird because I spoke to the writers. They said that bringing Natasha back was a way to remind viewers that this relationship with Big wasn't always pretty. It was very messy at the beginning. But again, it's like they did a good job of that with some aspects, but her going through Biggs' effects, I don't know if you guys had the same thought, but I was thinking Carrie would find something much more incriminating than like a Pinkberry, you know, punch card. What were you thinking?
I love the smallness of the Pinkberry punch card, though. Like,
it was
like,
a good
I know
line.
This man at all. Right. It's a that's a nice Sex and the City level.
It's
detail.
A good it's a good specific detail. Like, right. Yeah, the amount that she was upset that he had a dog that he hadn't mentioned her like that very much felt like something that Carrie Bradshaw would make into a big deal.
Good
because
point.
Looking yeah. back, when you go back and watch like those first, especially the first two seasons, when that's, you know, their actual relationship. She really does come on very strong very quickly and doesn't seem to have any understanding for like why he has reasonable like objections to that.
I know, I need to go back and watch those episodes.
I know. I haven't rewatched in a long time.
I rewatched it in a fugue state when I was on maternity leave and like, you know, up at 3 a.m. So maybe my my recollection is definitely colored a little bit by that. But
I would love to read that essay about your experience going through that at that time of your life.
Can we talk about Stanford and Anthony, especially because in this fourth episode, it seems like they're writing off Stanford because Willie Garson died, which is another really sad aspect of this show coming back. I found that write-off very weird. I have never been a fan of Stanford and Anthony being married at all, so them getting a divorce feels like for the best. But, I mean, is this just the best that they could do with, you know, this tragedy striking in the middle of production?
I mean, yeah, what did Michael Patrick King say to you about Stanford, Julie, if you talked about that?
Well, he said initially that he had Stanford in all of the episodes for the season, but Willie Garson didn't even realize he would be as sick as he ended up being. So I guess when Willie did get that sick, Michael Patrick King actually wrote this very beautiful lunch scene between Carrie and Stanford that was going to be essentially a goodbye, with Stanford explaining that he was going to go off to represent this client via TikTok. And it was a beautiful scene, but I guess Willie was only able to shoot part of it. He wasn't able to conclude the scene, so he passed suddenly, and Michael Patrick King had to just sort of paper over the fact that they didn't have a way to really walk his character out elegantly. So that's why we get the truncated scene where all of a sudden we find out that Stanford flew the coop without saying goodbye to anyone.
That is so, that is like so heartbreaking to know that
really
that's the reason.
Sad.
It's so heartbreaking. And I guess his last day on set was filming Big's funeral. And it's hard to believe that he was so sick because he's so full of life during those scenes.
I know.
And you forget how good he is. I think episode 3, there's that amazing scene where he's at the foretop and the door keeps hitting him, the
yes.
kitchen door. And then episode 4, he still managed to film a few scenes for that. But the genius scene where he's like hiding out and he runs back in to get his martini. It's just very sad.
Yeah, that that lunch scene, because you forget like how much of Sex and the City is based on them sitting at restaurants. And that one with them with the kitchen door is so funny and so well done.
But he will be missed. Right.
Yeah, and just like considering what a big part of the show he was, like, I understand the limitations, and you know, obviously they didn't plan for it to be this way. Obviously they would have done anything to change, you know, if they had filmed it earlier or something, maybe something else, he could have been sent off another way. But even so, I feel like the solution is just very it feels haphazard because it had to be, I guess. And it's just kind of a shame that that had to be what happens for Stanford, who, you know, Carrie is not going to see him again. And I kind of wonder how the show is going to handle that further down the line.
Right.
Yeah. Was he, why does it make sense for Stanford to manage a TikTok star? Is that a thing that's happened before?
I don't know.
I can't remember what Stanford's original... We learned Stanford's job at the very beginning of the show, and then I think he just never talked about it again.
Not that he needed to. Like, I don't care what Stanford's job is.
Well, what was... Anthony was a wedding planner, right?
Well, right.
Yeah.
Why is he running a sourdough business?
Because he started a sourdough starter during the pandemic, Hillary. Obviously, the pandemic is a huge part of all of their lives, where they wear no masks and just go to restaurants all the time.
And what? It's all hot guys work there? What's the premise?
Yeah,
like,
they deliver
like hot buns or something.
Right.
Yeah, you know, because when you buy bread, you want it to be delivered like hand delivered by a shirtless man.
Yeah, Anthony having a bakery. I mean, that's fine. Like, whatever. Everyone.
Okay. Apparently, Stanford
thing.
Has always been a talent agent.
Uh-huh. Oh, okay.
We just never knew anything about his work. I feel like his storylines were never about work. They were always just, you know, his dating life, as far as I can remember.
Yeah. I'm going to really miss his point of view.
Yeah, but I do agree with you, Katie, though, that it was always, like, crazy that the show put him and Anthony together, or that the movies put him and Anthony together. And so it's nice, I guess, at least to divorce, like, put that relationship out of its misery.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, at least in, like, when we do see them together, we see them just fighting all the time. Because
they always hated each other. That was the whole point.
I know. They needed to be able to continue hating each other without being in a relationship.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.
All right, where are we landing on Miranda's whole deal? She's, like, of the three of them, I think the one who's struggling. Carrie's a widow, so, like, fine, she's struggling too, but, like, she's got this drinking problem that's been, like, telegraphed pretty broadly throughout the whole time. She and Steve are not sleeping together. It seems like Che, it's going to be, I don't know. I mean,
she has to constantly listen to her disgusting son have sex.
Oh,
Brady
sucks too much.
So much. Why do we have to deal with Brady being so awful?
I was not expecting that episode to open up with him having sex. I was not ready for that.
Yeah, like the first episode, like one of the first things we hear is about Brady having sex. Not what I wanted.
Not cool. Like, I get that. I guess, you know, I mean, it's good, I guess, that it's not called Sex in the City anymore since so few of them are having sex. But I don't want the one representative of sex to be a 17-year-old child.
So anyway, what do we think that happened with Miranda? How do we feel like they're dealing with her?
I mean,
Miranda always got the short end of the stick on the show. Everybody got, like, their share of humiliation sometimes, but it sometimes felt like there was kind of a particularly, like, sadistic streak. Like, she ate cake out of the garbage.
Right.
Oh, yeah. I think of that often.
she had, like, one time her entire, like, C plot was a guy in a hot dog suit hitting on her. Like, with these things in the show's history, I guess it makes sense that she would be unhappy and searching and kind of pathetic. But yeah, it's a bummer, the Miranda storyline, I think. Maybe that's just because I would imagine all three of us probably identify as Mirandas. But
oh,
I don't know, actually. No, Julie, I guess you're maybe more of a Carrie.
Oh, I am so flattered at this analysis.
Who are you, Julie?
I don't know. I guess I've never. Maybe I had a little bit of Charlotte, but I love Hillary's take. Katie, what are you?
I feel like I landed on Carrie often for, like, the, like, being the, like, person writing about everybody in the group. But I think, like, deep down, like, I'm Miranda. Like, I think I'd rather be home watching, like, British television than actually going out. That's And also, as I told Hillary, her and Steve's Sunday setup is incredible.
Oh,
like, I'm jealous.
It might
of
be
that.
The most enviable thing on this entire season.
Really,
we're supposed to pity her for it, but
I know.
But I'd be there every night if you're going to set out an entire tray of toppings,
right?
And, like, in, like, artfully arranged containers with each have their own spoon. Like, I mean, the dishes seem insane, but that's a separate thing.
Well, I asked Michael Patrick King, and am I name dropping too much? I feel like
you're the expert. It's not like you guys, I mean,
right.
Were you guys, like, hanging out at a chic restaurant where you were having this
right at the Soho
that's
Lounge? Yeah. Yeah. No, we were Soho House rather. No, I asked him about Miranda specifically, and his initial response was to say that he had extensive conversations with each of the lead actresses because they are all billed as executive producers. So he kind of implied that Cynthia Nixon very much wanted to shake up Miranda's life. The drinking storyline, the writers, you know, claim that this is just a refracted storyline of what we were all going through during the pandemic, increasingly leaning on alcohol. But the writers were also saying that of the characters, Miranda is the least likely to settle for comfort. She was always questioning things, so she would have a hard time kind of finding herself in this very stationary Sunday bar fueled existence. And when I asked about the Che storyline, because I picked up on in episode 3 a very romantic chemistry.
That's explicit.
For sure.
So, but Michael Patrick King and the writers of episode 3 kind of bristled at that suggestion, saying that, you know, Miranda's eyes were more just widened, like this was a moment for her to kind of be exhilarated and kind of just jolted out of whatever sleepwalking existence she had had. They have such incredible chemistry.
So that's interesting to hear, because it definitely feels like the show is, like Katie said before, at least setting Miranda up to have a crush on Che, even if it doesn't, like, I think that
right.
It doesn't seem super invested in Miranda and Steve as a relationship anymore in the way that it did previously.
Poor Steve. Steve just, he needs to go out. I don't know. He's half deaf. Do we know why he's hard of hearing now? I just feel bad for him. He can't hear. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I wonder if that's going to come back in some
poor
way.
Steve.
I
mean,
do you think they're going to break Miranda and Steve up?
I think they already tried that and it didn't take. So I guess, you know, if nothing else, then maybe it'll just, you know, force her to come home and be more invested in her relationship and like try again. It doesn't seem like they care that much about each other. And it doesn't seem like the show cares that much about them. And if they're staying together for their kid, then their kid sucks. So what is
You can stay together for the kids unless your kid sucks, in which case just get out of there.
I do like the idea of Miranda, who's always been so in control, being less in control, whether it's, you know, the drinking, and I do not condone any sort of alcohol dependency, or, you know, she's smoking weed, or she's just exploring this new side of herself. I'm open for that.
Like, not for nothing, and I'm sure that, you know, the show knows this, like, it would maybe mirror some developments in Cynthia Nixon's actual life, and I don't know if they want to stay away from that or if they want to embrace it, but like, Cynthia Nixon was married to a man and had a kid, and then, you know, later in life married a woman, and
yeah.
And
it'd be more authentic than like Samantha being a lesbian for a couple episodes.
Oh, for sure.
Right.
And I would think that having an actual like queer woman like there to, you know, advise and to give ideas, like that would make a huge difference. Because I mean, this is something that Vanity Fair writer Cassie DaCosta wrote after And Just Like That was first announced, was just like, for a show that was made by straight women and gay men, like Sex and the City was always very weird about queerness.
Hmm.
And the show now seems to be, I mean, through Che at least, and maybe in other ways too, kind of addressing that and trying to correct for that as well. Like, not just the whiteness, but also, like, you know, there's an entire episode in the original series about Carrie being uncomfortable with, like, the concept of bisexuality, which is, like, crazy to think now that there was, like, half an hour of her just being like, are bisexual people real?
Wow. And Hillary, didn't you say there was an episode also where Miranda flirts very briefly with the idea of dating a woman?
Oh yeah, it's in season 1. Miranda is like one of the partners at her firm, or one of her coworkers sets her up with a woman because they think that she's a lesbian, and then Miranda realizes that like it's nice to have somebody to like bring to company functions, so she thinks like maybe I'll give this a go, and then she kisses her and is like, nope, I'm straight, and that's the end of it.
It's the exact plot of the 30 Rock episode where Liz Lemon gets set up on a date with a woman. Like, and it's just like, yeah, men suck. And then it's like, well, no, keep them around for some reason.
Yeah, and that's not enough. That does not make you a lesbian, not liking men.
Well, how about where they're headed with Charlotte's kid, Rose?
Oh, yeah, Rose.
Yeah, like, I mean, watching Charlotte grapple with that is kind of similar to her, like, you know, trying to have non-white friends. It's like, yeah, this is something that Charlotte would, like, try her best around, like maybe not be that elegant at. I'm not like super sure they're handling it all that well, but I'm interested to see where Rose winds up.
It feels a little kitchen sink, though. It does feel like, well, you know, children like who are non-binary or who are trans, like that is a hot button issue right now, and we have to find a way to work it into the show. Like,
right. Of the characters, though, I guess it is nice that we're going to see Charlotte, who's so girly, confront this issue of all of them. But just in the spirit of plucking Cynthia Nixon's real life storylines for Miranda, I would love for Miranda to go into politics. Like, let's just close out this college storyline.
If Sex and the City could make her New York governor, then I think that I would like to live in that alternate reality.
I mean, speaking of alternate realities, like, the pandemicness of it is so weird because, like, the way they talk about it, I think someone says, like, I lost my husband at the beginning of COVID. It's been a year and a half. So it was, like, supposed to
be Bitsy Von Muffling and her husband, Nathan Lane.
Right. Man, what a loss not to have Nathan Lane on this.
I'm kind of surprised. Do you think that he just didn't want to be on the show? Like, why would you lose an opportunity to bring back Nathan Lane?
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, I don't know what they filmed it in the summer. I don't know what they could have done to, like, anticipate the pandemic still being around. But have you guys gotten over the weirdness of them being like, oh, yeah, during the pandemic, you're like, guys, it's still going on. We're not done yet.
Well, right. It's weird to me when they refer to the pandemic because they're living such pandemic-free lifestyles inside these restaurants.
Yeah,
and
the fact that literally
masks.
Nobody has a mask ever. Like, you would
think
that...
Yeah, like, not even the wait staff.
Yeah, you would think, at least on the train, which Miranda takes now.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, they're all sharing purse wine, I don't know, out of cups.
Do you think that everybody has a driver and a car because they're afraid of, like, is Carrie afraid of hailing cabs now or afraid of Uber because of the pandemic? Or am I just overthinking?
I feel like given the way the rest of the show deals with the pandemic that you're overthinking, but I don't know.
Right. They have Miranda on the subway, but the subway
they
was
do
never
have Carrie,
cleaner.
Yeah, but they have Carrie wearing gloves so that she doesn't have to touch the elevator button.
Oh, interesting.
Oh, they do?
Yeah. She mentions that in episode one, I think.
Oh, I remember the gloves. I think I missed that line. Yeah, it's a weird, like, half in, half out. But, you know, you imagine somebody watching this in 5 years and, like, God knows, hopefully by then we're not wearing masks everywhere. So, like, maybe it just gives them a little bit more longevity in you know, telling a story that includes the pandemic but not revolving around it.
Yeah, right. For sure. Although for a show that was always very proud of its, like interconnection with New York, New York is, I feel like, the one place where people wear masks. Like, everywhere. And so if you want to get, like, that bit of, like, verisimilitude.
Right.
Yeah.
They're really plucking the pandemic elements that they can chicly accessorize. So, like, gloves, yes. Masks, no.
That's such
I want to know who's got the, like, fanciest at-home testing kit and is going to, like, compete to show that off. What a chic pandemic we've been having.
Maybe in, like, episode 9, they hear about Omicron. And in 10, everybody is hunkered down again.
It's going to be like the newsroom where they just, like, do the news just a little bit later. do you guys want to predict the future a little bit? So there's going to be 10 episodes total. I should know that.
There are 10 episodes total.
So we're not quite halfway through. What do you guys think? What do you guys think is going to come next?
This is so fun.
Hmm.
Carrie's she's going to go on some dating app dates. She's going to realize how different the dating world is. I'm just, like, thrilled for her to get back there on the scene.
Are we gonna see Aiden again? Is that
Aiden is confirmed to return, much to my much to my distaste. I am an on the record Aiden hater. And if this show, after everything we've been through, just up and has her wind up with Aiden, I am going to, like, throw my, like, Manolos into the river.
I can't stomach it. And Hillary, what is it about Aiden that irks you so much?
I just hate the way that I just don't think that he and Carrie make sense together because he just doesn't like anything about the way she actually is. He, like, spent their entire relationship trying to turn her into somebody else. And she, I don't know, liked the security of it until she didn't. And, like, I think that the fact that he is, like, the one guy that she was with who, like, wasn't a terrible narcissist doesn't mean that they should be in a relationship forever. But I want to see Berger come back. I want to know what Berger is up to. That's what I wish for.
Oh, my God.
I would love if Carrie's just swiping through potential hookups and she sees Berger. We get even, like, a face cameo, just a screen cameo.
Oh, that would
cameo.
Be such a great scene. Like bring back Justin Theroux as that
right.
author.
Yes.
And
like,
Bradley Cooper.
Oh, God. What was Bradley Cooper's deal? Was he the one who tipped her like she was a prostitute?
Bradley Cooper was the one who saw her on the cover of New York Magazine, Single and Fabulous?
Right.
Right. And he was like, is this you? And then he like drove off.
Oh, yeah. Please bring them all back. Like, Tinder's a perfect excuse to not even have to, like, get them on set.
Who do you think is going to be the character we're going to see have sex first?
I mean, Harry and Charlotte.
Please not.
Harry and Charlotte still have sex, presumably.
Yeah, Harry strolling through that bathroom shirtless. Like, good for you, Evan Handler. Like, he's looking great.
Yeah, if nothing else, I'm really glad that Harry and Charlotte are together and nothing bad can happen to them or their relationship.
Yeah, I need, like, because he's the way he deals with her anxieties about, like, going to that dinner party is so funny and, like, perfect counterbalance to her personality and, like, I think tracks with who he is. So I'm still very much rooting for them.
Yeah, they're the one couple that I guess ever really had the potential to make it long term. I mean, oh, we haven't really talked at all about the Samantha, the elephant in the room.
Yeah, that's true.
What did you guys think of the way they handled that?
Go
ahead, Hillary.
I was just going to say, I'm glad that it's a friendship breakup on the show, because I think that that's really interesting territory to explore. And that it's much better than, you know, it makes a lot more sense than either killing her or saying like, oh, she's just in London and we don't talk that much, but like, we're still friends, and like having her send texts or something without ever appearing. Like, it's the most natural way to write her off. And it does leave a door open if there's some universe ever where Kim Cattrall would want to return to the show. But yeah, Katie, what do you think?
Yeah, I was really going to say the same thing. I'm glad they like got into it. I saw someone arguing that like Samantha's pride would never be hurt in that way and have a friendship breakup, which like, I sort of buy and sort of don't. Like, she always was pretty inflappable, but like, I don't know, being a PR wizard in your 60s is probably not very easy. So like, I could see there being something like that to get in the middle there. I feel like I've heard someone suggest that like, what if Kim Cattrall really does show up this season? I don't think that's going to happen, but
I would be,
it does seem like they're
really,
leaving the opportunity.
Really shocked. That seems impossible to me.
I would be happy. I would love to see them like, set whatever shit aside and have her on the show. But I do think it makes sense the way that they handled it.
Right.
I don't know. The fact that they're releasing like trailers and key art for How I Met Your Father at the same time that and just like that premiered feels pointed, even if it's not.
Wait, what's the connection I missed between this and How I
Met
Your
Kim
Father?
Cattrall plays the Bob Saget role on How I Met Your Father.
Oh! So she's on her own entire.
She's got another show happening. Yeah, at the same time.
Wow. Good for her.
What do you think, Julie? Do you miss Samantha?
Honestly, I was good with it. And I thought it was a very high road approach to take, you know, factoring that friendship breakup into it. And I felt like they could have definitely villainized Samantha in a different world, just given all the tabloid backstories. But I felt like they handled the plot line with dignity and respect. I asked Michael Patrick King if he had heard from Kim after the episodes premiered, but he said he hadn't. If I'm Kim Cattrall, I'm very touched by the way they handled the storyline. And Hillary,
I think she's still burning that grudge.
No, but Hillary, you had that good analysis, because they do very much leave an opening for Kim Cattrall. If in any version of the world, she, you know, her job on the other show wrapped up and she wanted to come back. And also, we very much see Carrie like apologizing to Samantha in those text messages. Hillary, you're
yeah,
reading
and trying to take some like responsibility or like some blame, I guess, for the collapse of the relationship, which does feel like a meta touch. Although I don't know, there are if and just like that, so much of it is Sex and the City trying to kind of like apologize for its own past and, you know, its lack of inclusion and, you know, the things that it did and said in the 2000s and the 90s that are not as acceptable in the culture today, then I do feel like it's kind of hard to translate Samantha as she was to the present day. Like, right. I think that the show would have a lot of trouble bringing her into anything like the real world in 2021, just because she is so, like, I mean, she had a whole episode about dating a black man and about his sister not liking her. And like, that is, I think, one of the like cringiest, like most difficult to watch episodes looking back. Like, it's pretty racist. And she had, you know, storylines where she was clashing with like the trans sex workers who were working on her block. Like, I don't know. And the pandemic stuff too. Like, if her whole thing is like going out and meeting people and having a lot of sex, then like, how did you do that even in a briefly post-pandemic world? I don't know. I think it would be really hard to write Samantha.
Right. She's definitely the least PC of those four characters.
So do you think maybe we'll see like Che or another character like actually having sex to counterbalance it? Or is it just going to be this kind of chaste version of Sex and the City?
I don't know. It doesn't seem like they care that much about sex anymore. It doesn't seem like anybody does.
Right.
They're all Mirandas and Steves just settling for their Sundays and and complicated Netflix series instead of having sex.
Miranda and Steve come for us all.
Right. Although before Big died, Carrie did have him. What was she going to have him do? Masturbate?
Oh, yeah. Then,
oh, God. Yeah. Wow. I had really blocked that out.
That scene was also very embarrassing.
That scene was so weird. Especially because, like, they've been married, you know, for God knows how long. And she comes in and, like, asks him about, like, a very basic element of his sex life. It's like, wait.
Right.
And I mean, I did see people being like, was Carrie always this much of a prude? I was like, yeah, she was absolutely always a prude.
That does ring true. Yeah. She was always writing about other people. And she was never, like, she was never getting that explicit about her own stuff.
Yeah, and her being, like, on that podcast, like, not willing to go there, like, that all seemed exactly right. But the big part was super weird.
Yeah, that and also her continuously asking other people to split, like, fattening entrees with her. That rings very true, too.
Right.
Well, I assume you guys will still be watching this every week, religiously. Like, I can't bow out now.
Oh, absolutely. I am in till the end.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, as bad as it has been, as bad as it's gotten, it's never going to be as bad as Sex and the City 2. I think we can all probably agree on that.
I have not revisited Sex and the City 2, but I'm sure that it doesn't. I'm sure a rewatch wouldn't do it any favors.
No, not at all. Hillary, what?
This franchise is put us through hell. We can't give up now.
Right.
Yeah, we got to see it through to the bitter end until the Peloton strikes all of us down.
Comes for us all. What were you going to say, Julie?
Oh, I was going to ask Hillary, the super fan, what storyline is giving you the most joy?
What storyline is giving me the most joy? That's a great question. There's not a ton of joy here, I gotta say. I really loved, this was like a blink and you'll miss it moment, but Ali Stroker, the amazing Broadway actress, popping up as one of the podcast engineers yelling at Carrie about her social her social presence. I thought that was great.
Oh, she was fantastic.
Back.
And getting in the fight with that guy, maybe they're the ones we'll see having sex. Her and that other guy from the podcast yelling about whatever hookup they had.
Oh, yeah. That was fun. Yeah. Like, I want there to be more fun. I think I understand why it has the tone that it has. Like, you kill off a major character, like, you don't want to just move away from that. But I do want it. I want it to be more fun. I want it to be more quippy. I want there to be more comedy, I guess. That's kind of what I'm hoping for from the rest of the season. I don't know. What about you guys?
Yeah, I'd land right about there. And I do feel like it's getting there. I feel like it led that funeral episode being kind of the like nadir of comedy. Like, it's been lightening up after that. So I've got hope that that's the direction it's heading in.
Right. She really got rid of all the big trappings, including this apartment. And she's going to be, I feel like, again, within those four episodes, they've finished up all the big storylines. And I think we're going to see her really starting in some new dating related directions. And I'm curious also what that's going to do to the relationships, just given Charlotte's in such a different place in terms of being married and having kids, and Miranda's going through such a very different storyline herself.
I mean, yeah, in some ways that was kind of the most unrealistic thing about the original show, is that these four women are friends in the first place, are friends mm-hmm. who are like close enough that they get lunch all the time.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, my vision of adulthood from this show definitely involved a lot more like brunches with the same people every week. It would be nice. All right, I think we can leave it there. We are not planning to do another Still Watching about Sex and the City, but who knows? Maybe there will be something so shocking in a future episode that we must reconvene on Mike.
When Aiden falls off the treadmill in episode 9.
I mean, Hillary, if you say that out loud and it happens, like, you're going to get the blame. So just be prepared for the Aiden Nation to come after you.
I would gladly take the ball.
Well, and usually at the end of Still Watching, we have everyone say where you can be found on the internet. So, Hillary, why don't you go first?
Oh, yeah, sure. Find me on Twitter at Hillabuster.
And how about you, Julie?
Also on Twitter at Julie W. Miller.
I'll be scouring the curbs of the Upper East Side for the Pelotons that have been taken away by the furious people. But other than that, I'm on Twitter at Katie Rich. This episode, as always, was edited and produced by Dave Gonzalez. And in the meantime, happy holidays, everybody.
I'm Nomi Fry, and this week on Critics at Large, we're talking about the delights and shortcomings of the new movie Challengers. It starred Zendaya at the center of a tennis triangle, and a very steamy love triangle.
Who are her loyalties to? Will she be tempted by the other one? How do these guys reckon their professional playing ambition with their romantic and sexual feelings about this mysterious woman? And such we have it. We have a conflict between three people and a game meant for two.
Is it a sports movie or a sex movie? Find out on Critics at Large from The New Yorker. New episodes drop every Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.